Buy a Damn site discusses the events and personal experiences relating to the flooding that took place in May of 2020 in Saginaw, Midland, and Gladwin counties in the state of Michigan. This content could be triggering to some listeners. Listener discretion is advised. My interview today is with Jerry Cole, also known as Jake. This interview was so compelling that I made it a two-part series. Please enjoy part one. When multiple dams failed in May of 2020, the resulting devastation was shocking. We all have a story to tell. This is one way those stories get told. This is how we remember. This is how we heal. This is how we move forward. Buy a damn site. Welcome back to Buy a Damn Site with Sarah Joe. I have a very special guest here today, Mr. Jake Cole. Welcome, Jake.
Thank you for having me.
So, Mr. Big Deal, Fire Chief, right?
I guess.
Did you sign up for all this?
I did. I actually volunteered for it.
Okay. All right. Well, we're sure glad to have you here. You grew up in Sanford, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
I had an amazing childhood. It was not your typical T-ball or playing baseball type childhood, but I grew up in a family business, Cole's Garage and Record Service, and it was kind of a unique place. Until I was 12 years old, we lived right at the station. We had an apartment out back, and we were literally about 50 feet off the train tracks, and so that was my upbringing. I grew up around the garage, riding my bicycle in and out between the traffic on the expressway and the train going behind the station, and I had two great parents. My dad, who was fire chief from 1947 to 1997, can't say enough about him. He had peanut butter for adrenaline. He had patience like no other man I ever met. But I was the youngest of 11 kids, and I was the seventh son of the bunch. So that meant I had a brother every day of the week that could throttle me a little bit. So on Sunday, I got the day off.
I'm sure that they kept you quite humble.
Yes. Yeah, my dad actually started, anybody familiar with the Sanford area, when you go down Center Street, the block two-story building that actually made it through the flood is still standing there. That was his first business he built when he was 18 years old, and he just worked on cars there. Then he moved across the street to where Buys was, and he built a garage gas station. Then he went down to where the current location of Kohl's is. And he had actually a car dealership down there. He picked all the winning ones. He had Hudson's and Kaiser Frazier's. He had the garage and the record service.
It's interesting to me that, you know, you speak with him with such high regard, but like sounds like he had a very full plate, but also sounds like he was a really active dad too.
He was. And we had that unique relationship because I didn't go to work with him every day. I just walked out of the house where he worked. So all my younger years, until I got my driver's license myself, I always rode in the wrecker with him. So we spent a lot of time together, and he was a good businessman, a good dad, and riding the wrecker with my dad. He was fire chief from 47 to 97 for 50 years. I can remember we were in the wrecker together, and we got a call that some people were trapped in a car on fire, and we're going there, and he told me to reach in the glove compartment and give him the can of Vicks that was in there. And he put some up his nose and he told me to do the same. He said, if there's actually anybody in the car fire, you won't be able to smell it and you'll be able to tolerate it a little bit better. So yeah, not the type lesson everybody gets from their dad, but anyway.
Now you, I believe, were a loss prevention officer at some point in your career. Is that correct?
I was. I left my family's business in 82, moved down to Florida for a couple of years. Came back, went to work for Dow Corning because my time in the fire department, I joined the fire department in 74, and I got my firefighter 1 and 2 and EMT, and I was with Sanford Police Department and Coleman Police Department and went to Delta.
Wait, Sanford had a police department?
Why, yes,
department?
We did.
Are
we
you kidding did. Me? Okay, this is news. This is big news, people. Okay.
So Sanford had a police department. Yeah. Okay, first of all, where was it?
So there used to be a village hall right there by where you went down to the village park off Center Street. You went down Lincoln Street, but it was right in the corner of Lincoln and Center. It was also the village hall, and that's where we worked out of. And we had one patrol car, and they always had the marshal, who was Ed Genzel. And the deputies over the years included people like Larry Nielsen, Lyle Siegert, John Sheffboo, and there was a flock of part-time people like myself.
Well, and all those names sound familiar. I mean, I can even think of like roads named, like those names that you're listing,
Nielsen
right?
Nielsen Road.
Yes.
Larry and Jerry Nielsen. Larry went on to clear the police department, and then he came back, was chief of police in Coleman, and Jerry Nielsen was sheriff in Midland County.
That's crazy. That's okay. So I didn't mean to interrupt you. No. I'm sorry. This was like new to me. I didn't know. So you were the sheriff in Sanford.
No, I was a deputy marshal.
Okay.
Then I went to Coleman and I was a police officer. And then I was in the sheriff department reserves for a while too.
Okay.
So,
and just for clarification for people, when we talk about loss prevention officer, you know, in the chemical plant world, those are like your first responders essentially.
Correct.
And then you went on and did some work with HSC, right? You were a maintenance superintendent, which is where we met in the spirit of transparency. You recruited me out of HR. I don't know how you talked me into working in the shops. For the record, also the most humbling experience of my life. So you spent some time at HSC during a time when they were growing leaps and bounds, right?
Yeah, I left loss prevention right after the Freeland train derailment over in Freeland. In fact, I was scheduled to leave, and they held me over for that. I took a shift supervisor's job for a while, then went on into the shops, ran most of the supply chain shops, Midland plant, and then the opportunity came up when HSC was expanded, and I went over there as a site maintenance superintendent, which is where I had the opportunity to recruit Sarah Jo out of the HR world.
I went back to HR for the record. No, it was good. It was a good experience. Okay. So then when you retired, how long would you say you were actually retired? Because like my prediction was like 2 weeks.
And that was about correct.
Because, okay.
Retirement felt like a vacation, but keep in mind too, I started working at my dad's garage when I was about 12 years old. I grew up working and all I always did. Always had at least two jobs, and then when retirement came, not doing anything was very foreign to me. So Mike Wood, a friend of mine, Jerome Township Supervisor, and I wound up picking up the Jerome Township Ordinance Enforcement, and then I wound up, did that for a while, and Hope approached me about joining their group, and then Edenville.
So you are, though, also back in the workforce, like officially, correct?
I am. An opportunity came up with RCL Construction in Sanford, Michigan. They work all over the state. They're a medium-sized construction company, a lot of commercial, industrial, municipality-type work. They were looking for a safety director, and I was looking for something a little bit more to do, so I joined up with RCL as well.
And then, on top of that, you decided, I think I'll be fire chief. I think I'll throw my hat in the ring for fire chief as well, right?
I did. Bob McNett retired from being fire chief. He's the one that took over after my dad left in 97. And when Bob retired, his son Wayne took over for a while. And then the job came back open in February of 2020. So I talked to a lot of the other fire chiefs, well, three particular fire chiefs in the area, about if they thought it'd be a good fit, talked to them a little bit about what their role was, different things like that. And I walked away feeling pretty comfortable I could do the job, and I kind of had their endorsement, so I decided to go for it. So I put my name in the hat for it and interviewed.
So you decided to throw your hat in the ring to be fire chief in Sanford, but you're also blight enforcement in Sanford, correct?
Correct. That's the ordinance enforcement piece. And in Edenville Township, and when I became fire chief in Jerome, I gave up the ordinance enforcement in Hope Township. So
do you sleep?
I do.
Is that a thing?
I sleep well because I keep busy.
Okay. And also, I'm sure you afford your lovely wife some peace and quiet, because I can't imagine if you were stuck at home what that situation would look like.
I am sure if I was stuck home all day with Beth, or if she was stuck all day with me, she would probably find me something else to do, playing golf or fishing or something like that to get me out of the house.
And speaking of your lovely wife, Bethany, you also have two kids of your own and some grandkids, right?
I do. My daughter is Chasey, who's married to Rod Bauer. They have two kids, my grandson Braxton and granddaughter Kinsley. And my son Cameron is married to Danielle, and they have three kids. Christian is the oldest, then Kennedy, and then Kingston.
The littlest.
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah, grandkids are where it's at. I just got to say that. Love my kids, but grandkids are awesome.
Well, I think this is a great time for us to transition into, you know, what you bring us today as part of this conversation is so important. My listeners, my audience has reached out a lot just trying to better understand, you know, what exactly unfolded here, what that timeline looks like, maybe what even led up to even before May 19th, right? Like, we spend a lot of time talking about May 19th and May 20th. I think there's some things that went on before that, like, we just don't necessarily understand that contributed to what went on. So it rained a lot. I don't even remember what day it started raining.
It did. And we'd already got a fair amount of rain that spring. April 30th, we had a flood watch going on, which most people don't even pay any attention to. And myself and my deputy chief for the fire department were down to the Stanford Dam, working with the operator down there, understanding what they had going. Because it looked like we were coming pretty close to an event. And growing up in the area, I'm pretty conditioned to when the water's getting high, what's going to start flooding first and where. And I used to have a house down in one of the flood zones. So we kind of knew what to look for. And April 30th, we're down at the dam. We're working with the operators and things like that. And I was just going to become fire chief in the next day or two, May 1st. So the last thing I wanted to do was be my first act was to have a flood. And even though we've been through a lot before, they're never a major event. And then moving on to about May 15th time frame, the watershed through the Tittabawassee River. So when you think about it, the watershed comes down and you had the four dams, the Secord, Smallwood, Wixom, and then Sanford.
And is Secord the farthest north of us?
It is.
Okay, so
yep.
So Secord,
yep.
Smallwood, Edenville, which is for those of you who aren't local, which is Wixom Lake, and then the last is the Sanford Dam.
Correct.
How far is that? Like, if you had to guess, do you know? I mean, is it 100 miles? Like, is Secord 100 miles away? I don't know.
Not by car, but by the complicated part when you start going up river and how it snakes and bends around and different things like that. So it's quite a watershed. But anyway, back to the rain conditions and different things like that. So April 30th, we dodged that one. Fast forward to about May 15th, which was Friday. Boyce Hydro, the operators up there, and I do want to give a shout out to them. And I know towards the end of the cast, we can talk a little bit more about recognizing people, but the operators up to the dams, they have the same operators for all four dams, and they do a pretty amazing job because it's a blend of experience, a little bit of technology, and some of the record keeping and things they do. So they did a pretty amazing job managing things. But they were starting to lower all four dams in anticipation of the major storms coming. May 16th on Saturday, the National Weather Service issued a flood watch for Sunday, May 17th through May 18th. Then on Sunday, we had a storm front going through that just became kind of stationary and hovered right over the area.
Like, let's go back. You've been fire chief 2 weeks.
Yep.
Maybe
yep.
Three. Like, you're approaching your third week. I mean, I know you have a wealth of experience, right? But there's a difference between being a team player and being the team captain.
Absolutely. You can ride in the car, but it doesn't mean you know how to drive. And then when you get in the driver's seat, and keep in mind, too, that we're right in the throes of a pandemic, a global pandemic at that time. And the day I became fire chief, I learned that Jerome Township was also going to be the Midland County. There was a facility here in Jerome Township they were using for anybody that had to be quarantined or that was tested positive for COVID that was homeless.
Mm-hmm.
That's where they were going to put them. So we were working on a lot of protocols, how to respond to that, different things like that. And the fire departments are evolving so much because we've always had a great relationship with Mid-Michigan EMS. And they've always used to supply us a lot of the things we used on calls with them, like gloves and masks and different things like that. And because of the demand and how much they use, we can't get it from them anymore, so we had to start buying it. And when you talk about the supply chains being impacted, a case of gloves, 6 boxes, 100 per box, used to be about $150. Now it's about $450.
Oh, my gosh.
And you have to have been buying from the supplier to even be able to get them.
So it's Saturday, and the National Weather Service says, you know, we think that you're positioned for the perfect storm here. There's going to be a lot of rain, and yep. It's going to hang out. Like, this isn't going to be, it's going to dump on you and move on. Because the flood we experienced in 2017, like, I feel like that was a really short wind. Like, that happened overnight, right? Like, it came, it was like a torrential downpour, and it moved on.
Absolutely.
It feels like this time, I mean, looking back, it feels like it rained a week.
It did. It rained a lot. And so when you look back on our flood events, significant flood events, it was 2017, 2014, and 1986. So on Monday the 18th, we're working very closely with Jen Boyer, who's the Midland County Emergency Services Coordinator. We're watching the weather. We're watching what the dams are doing. We're getting updates on how much each dam is spilling probably about every 3 hours. And the trend is going, they're dumping more, but the water's coming up in all the locations even more. It was on Monday, late Monday, we were talking to the operators at the dam, and Jennifer concurred, too, that we're looking at a 2017-type flood event, mm-hmm. which means a lot of the houses in the village are going to get flooded again. 2017 was about, the river level was about 32.1. Remember, that river level is down at the Dow Dam. Because right. They are installing some river gauges in this area now, but at that time, the only indication we had, we just had to use it as a trend, was Dow's river gauge.
Okay.
As the day progressed, about 5:30, Central Dispatch sent out a text that Boyce Hydro went to alert condition for Edenville, which means all gates are open, waters continue to come up, we're going the wrong direction.
So all of the gates are open, meaning it's pretty much free flow, and the lake levels are still going up.
Still rising.
So you're at full discharge. You're taking on more water than you're discharging, essentially.
Correct.
Okay. I'm sure that happens, right? But that's not something people, like normal people, discuss. Normal people don't talk about dams. That's right. Not a thing.
So when you first hear that, we've encountered that a few times in the past, but it's not long-lived. It was about 7:30, the forecast was the river to crest at 32.4 feet.
And this is 7:30 in the morning or 7:30 at night that they're...
7:30 on Monday night. So now we're looking at more of an impact in 2017. So we're continuing to watch things, we're paying attention to what's going on. I'm home about 10:30 p.m., I get a call, it's Jen. They're pulling all the chiefs together for a Zoom meeting, which was something kind of new to all of us, but fortunately I've been involved in a few of them.
Because it was pandemic, right?
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
Pandemic, you can't meet it anywhere. So that gave me about 20 minutes to get my officers somewhere to meet with them. So I just had everybody come up to the house, my house, so I get ready for the Zoom meeting. They showed up at my house. Jennifer's role, she can't say you have to do this, but what she does is present the evidence. So anybody that has a right to be in a chief's role will draw the conclusion we are going to start implementing our plans, and we made that agreement. So 11:35, Jerome Township as well, some other township fire departments, were all toned out to report to their stations. So that was the first, by the time we mobilized, got people out. Now keep in mind, we have a plan that's been in effect for a number of years now, and it gets fine-tuned all the time. We're fortunate enough that in September 2019, they did a tabletop exercise on this plan. So what it is, and it was amazing how accurate it was, because this plan tells you what addresses and different things like that you have to go to, right down the street address, to evacuate these houses. And the plan is to do a door-to-door. So we went through that, and obviously that is the first time we ever did that, so we paid attention to how much time it took. So when we got done with that, it was probably about 6:30 a.m. Well, I went home. A lot of people went to work.
To your knowledge, have people ever been evacuated?
No.
Even Midland County, I'm just trying to understand who has experience in this, or if we literally, because it's important to recognize that what your team did is very commendable because, you know, it's the middle of the night. People are confused. The news wasn't talking about it during, you know, that day,
right.
Like they were in the next day, right? So, I mean, obviously the interest in people being evacuated would trigger news stories, but I'm saying, like, I wouldn't, as a normal person sitting in Sanford, like, I didn't feel like we were in imminent danger. I knew it wasn't good. I knew that we were going to have flooding, but I didn't know that we would get to the point where there would be evacuations. So I'm trying to understand, like, you know, was our preparedness so refined that, like, nobody had done this before and we executed that plan? Or, like, have people in Midland County been evacuated before?
Not on that scale, no. Now, even in our area, we have the area down Main Street, some of that area. It probably encompasses 15 houses. We'd always go, like in 2017, 2014, and so on, knock on the doors, give them the notes saying, hey, there's a strong possibility of flooding. You need to pay attention. Here's how you get information. But to actually go up down both sides of the lake, no. Never anything like that before. And it's interesting because growing up with my dad, fire chief, there was always two things you were worried about when the train tracks went through Sanford: train derailments with hazardous materials. And the other thing was, if the dam failed, what would it look like? So thank God, along the way, we actually developed a plan, a good plan. There's numerous other plans that the county emergency services coordinators have put together, scenarios that, you know, you figure out what your high-risk things are, and you develop these plans. The accuracy of the flood plan amazed me. Yeah, so in our department at that time, there was 16 people. We dropped a few folks, and we were down to, in fact, we just had one of our members, Sandy Hoka, come back and join us again. So we're up to 17. Sandy had been out of the department for 7 years, and she came back. She came back like on the May 18th was her official first day back.
Oh, my gosh.
So it was kind of amazing. But
bless her heart.
Yeah. And so you're spot on. And all these are working people. I mean, they have real full-time jobs. As you know, your husband's just joined the department.
Right. These are volunteers.
Yep. And it's something you do. And the journey to become a firefighter is, you know, when you join the fire department, you have to start taking your classes right after Labor Day. The first week after Labor Day, you start your medical classes that go to mid-November. Then you start the fire academy, which we have four people in right now, and they graduate May 3rd. So it is a major commitment. It's 2 to 3 days a week. It's a lot of work.
It's like going to college, right?
Yeah. So you become a firefighter, and then this particular day, I'll go back to the subject at hand. So everybody comes in, they get toned out, they come, we do the evacuations, we come back, we do an AAR, an after-action review, highlights, anything we need to think about, because the status of the evacuation changed along the way, but we still need to prepare for that real main event, because you don't know if it could come the next day or the same day, and which it did. It came the same day.
When those things happen in the night, you know, people are sleeping in their beds and don't realize that they're in harm's way. Usually, you know, you watch tragedies happen on the news, but when things unfold during the day, it seems like people heed warnings, right?
Yep.
But when it's in the night, it's a whole different ball of wax.
Yeah, because if it's easy for people to miss that information, and then some people are like, I'm pretty comfortable.
Yeah.
I'm going to stay right where I'm at. So we executed the evacuation plan, mobilized six emergency vehicles with 12 crew members, did the evacuation, came back, did the AAR. All the firefighters that had to work that Tuesday.
Like at their real jobs.
At their real job, went to work.
Oh, my gosh.
So they're up all night, they go to work, they come back, and 5 a.m. that morning, the Tittabawassee River reached 26 and a half feet, Anything over 24 is considered flooding, but it's not really an event. 6:50 a.m. Once again, Boise Hydro let the county emergency management know that the dams are structurally sound.
So that's important, okay? I've talked to a lot of people, and that statement right there is why people went home. And I know that that was done on the news.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's not irresponsible because that was the information shared. I think it was so optimistic and it gave people, you know, the sense that like you can come home, right?
Yeah.
You can go home, take a nap. If you didn't go to work today, relax. We are structurally sound. To me, we are structurally sound as you are safe.
Yes. You know, one of the things in the back of my mind too, and that information came out in a number of different ways. And we were the blunt of a few jokes that maybe we overreact and stuff like that, but we act on the information we were provided. And I'm not bashing anybody involved in emergency services in any way, shape, or form, because you get the information you're provided.
Yeah.
You take the facts. So, yep. And that word came out.
And spread like wildfire.
Yes.
You know, when we came home, drove through Sanford, we could still get through Saginaw Road.
No problem anywhere.
No. And the ball field was full, per the usual. I mean, that happens, unfortunately. I've seen it happen several times. And I remember when we crossed the bridge, my son said, I think we better get home and just stay there. Because he was concerned about, you know, he had never seen that before, okay. You know. But I just think it's so important that, you know, people wanted that information that, like, the dam is going to hold out. They wanted that information so bad that, like, we just clutched onto that and everybody went home.
Yeah. You know, when you talk about Monday morning, too, I want to go back to that just for a little bit, because there was so much information coming in, how relevant is it and things like that. And the one thing I've learned over time is you want to see how fast the water is rising and be able to monitor that situation. It helps in the whole trend and predict things on a local level. So I went up to RCL, got a 10-foot piece of vinyl, marked it out every 6 inches. And the only reason I used a 10-foot piece, that's all I could find. I was just looking for a 6 or 8. So I went down to the park and one of the power poles, and I screwed that on the side of it at the water level right then, which was next to nothing. And I thought, anybody sees me, they're going to make fun because I got this 10-foot story pole, and they're going to be like, are you waiting for Noel's Ark or what?
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
I never got the chance to see the water coming up on that because by the time I got back to it, the pole and everything was gone. So
yeah, right, yeah.
But we'll continue on. It was Tuesday there. By about 3:30, 4 o'clock, a group of fire chiefs were asked to go up as a delegation up to the Edenville Dam and talk to the group from the state up there, along with Boise Hydro representatives and others. Fisher Contractor was there, J.W. Fisher, which was kind of a calming sight to see him there because he understands a lot above a lot of different things. So what we didn't know as we were standing there in that parking lot talking behind us, it was already starting to breach because once we got that information, we were okay. Our delegation was going back to the Edenville Township Fire Station to talk about what we learned and what the next steps was going to be. Just as we got back to the station, our pagers and radios started going off that the dam was failing. And you know, that surreal moment that this really can't be happening because if Edenville Dam fails, that trillion gallons or so of water, plus or minus a lot, it's going to go to Sanford, and Sanford Dam, you know, the plug, the fusible link, the spillway is going to give. This really can't be going on. We've talked about our lives. We've planned for it. You know, we've had drills, but this really can't be happening. And, but yet here we are. And, John Hanson and I rode up together. So we hopped back in his truck like everybody else. I mean, Edenville was deploying their troops, everybody else, you know, so we get in the truck, tones are going off, we're on the radios, we're on the phones, we're talking to people. John and I are scurrying back to our own departments to start getting things going. Roger Dufresne was in that meeting too, and Roger assured us that he already had his firefighters at the station. They're going to start deploying. They're good to go. Midland Township Fire Department was going to back them up in some areas. So, and I want to just stop there for a second and say one thing. The amazing community all the fire departments are, from the city of Midland to every paid-on-call volunteer fire department in Midland County, the connection is absolutely amazing, because you need something, your fellow firefighters are there, Ricky Tech. There's no hesitation. In fact, actually, you don't even have to ask. They're going to be on your door knocking to see what you need. So it's just amazing how it all comes together. But so back to the events at that point in time. So as John Hanson and I are going back towards Sanford, because he'd picked me up at my house, and we got a call that there was a car accident about a quarter mile from our location. We were on M30. It was on Water Road. One car was on fire. Nobody was sure if there was anybody in the car or not. And it's like, we got to at least divert and make sure that if anybody's in the car, we do our part. So we went over there. John checked the backseat of the car on fire. I got the front seat. And right at that pinnacle time, I could tell he was a more experienced fire chief. He grabbed the back door right away when I went to the front door. That was hot.
But, right.
So by that time, Jerome Township, a group of our firefighters were pulling in with an engine. All they did was knock the flame down, because by that time already traffic was picking up, and traffic along Water Road was being held up due to this car and the road on fire. So they knocked it out, went back, started getting ready to deploy for evacuation. So, and we went in. We had the dress rehearsal that morning. Everybody, we kind of knew the routes. Everybody had the papers. People had we had them printed out. Folks hopped in the trucks they used the night before. Did a repeat of the same thing, but this time there was no going to doors knocking. It was a get in, but people know, use air horns, PAs, sirens, different things like that. Make sure people were out. There was a few people we had to help. There was a few people that refused to leave, but we didn't have time to deal with them right then, which some of those folks we want going back later and helping them get out of the high water via boat or trucks, whatever it took. So, but that was at 5 o'clock. We met up there 5:43. The Central started issuing the texts and pages that the immediate evacuation due to dam failure. So that was 5:43. The estimate was an hour and 50 minutes for the water to reach Sanford Lake. So 5:43, the dam's failing, the tones goes out. 7:17 is when I was taking pictures of flood water crossing Saginaw Road at Center Street. 7:33, the floodwater is crossing Saginaw Road at Maple Street, so it's progressing. Approximately 8 p.m., the M30 bridge at Wixom Lake collapsed. 8:11, floodwater crossed the Saginaw Road bridge over the Tittabawassee, so that's right there at 7 Mile. We had to go down. We had reports. There was a large number of people on the bridge waiting to take pictures of the water. I mean, we had to get a group of firefighters down, scurry them off the bridge. The EOC requested some additional information, so we watched, informed what we saw, what was happening with the spillway. And later in the evening, they asked to see if the dam was still structurally sound. So I took one of our one-ton utility trucks, went to the east side of the dam, the back side, the lake side, and it amazed me. Even though the water topped it, the water was topping over the gates and already going through the spillway, everything was symmetrical and still intact at the dam. I expect to see things helter-skelter and broken concrete, but this dam that's almost, it's 95 years old, is still there.
The little dam that could.
Yep.
And so, can you imagine what that would have looked like if that would have been I want to acknowledge that there was a failure, okay? But it did exactly what it was supposed to
Absolutely.
Do. So I think it's important to, you know, acknowledge and celebrate that, you know, that was not a catastrophic failure from a collapse perspective.
Correct.
That dam did exactly what it was supposed to do, which is amazing because it's 100 years old.
You know, and and not trespass everything else like that, but in my capacity as fire chief, because after the flood, we had so many LP tanks and other hazard material type things. So I was on that catwalk over the gates again, and I just can't believe how it held up.
Yeah.
When you look at all the damage the flood water caused, it's amazing.
Makes you feel a lot of pride, right?
Yeah.
I mean, those people, you know, we laugh about, you know, the lack of technology at the time and in those steam, was it steam shovels that they used?
Yes.
And the one that was sunken in Wixom Lake and abandoned, right? But, you know, they had very crude tools, but did an outstanding job. I mean,
yeah, you look at the pictures of when they were building Sanford Dam. I mean, there was horses involved and there was primitive equipment. And in the time frame and pictures I've seen over the years, it did take about 2 years to build it.
Yeah.
But, man, it's still there today.
Right, right.
So I've been going in house fires ever since I was 18 years old. You know, ever since we got air packs, I've been going into house fires. And it still scares me more to go into a water rescue. And, in fact, we actually had an outside company coming in to give us a water rescue training in June. I'm sending 16 of my best friends and family members, my sister, my nephew, other people, they're going into harm's way. And I remember telling a number of them that do your job, do not get hung up. If you need help or we need to go back later, pay attention to the water. And we tell you evac. It's a burden putting that many people in harm's way. Two of our guys were expecting their second babies. All these things go through your mind that, you know, how do you keep everybody safe? I know bad things are coming, but we are so blessed in Jerome Township and like every other department in the county to have such qualified people serving our communities. I just can't say enough about them.
And that, my friends, concludes part one. Stay tuned for part two later this month. And if you haven't yet, like and follow us on Facebook to be the first to know when the next episode drops. Buy-a-Dam site should not be considered a single source of truth relating to the events and history discussed. My mission is to give people a platform to share their experiences just as they remember them. With that in mind, listeners should expect varying accounts of dates, times, and sequences of events. When people take the time to share their story with us, I allow them to do just that. I've said many times since the loss of the lakes that I will spend the rest of my days being thankful for the things I didn't even know I could lose. My people are my team. Art and logo collaboration with Breanne Helzel and Dennis Diener. Lead swag consultant, Dennis Diener. Editing support and quality control from my husband, Jacob Rowley. Equipment and audio support by Mitchell Boyce. My silent partners who support every wild idea I ever dream up, Selena Dodman and Kelly Stimson. And finally, thanks, Mom.